Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here, Radio 720 WGN. Shantae's behind the glass producing us tonight. Roger Badish is in the newsroom. Good morning, Mr. Badish.
Why, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. I'm doing great.
I didn't get enough sleep tonight, Roger.
Hey, join the club.
I hate when I do that. You know what I did? I came down to work to my little studio, Black Dog Radio Productions, to sleep tonight because we came downtown to see my 14-year-old son, Jack, is a high school freshman, and he plays on the Marion Central Catholic baseball team.
Oh, nice.
So they didn't have enough sophomores this year, so they combined the freshman and sophomore teams.
Okay.
And they're playing sophomore teams, which makes it really hard on the freshmen.
Right. But and it's great experience.
It's great experience to get it handed to you once in a while. Builds character. Mm-hmm. But tonight, they had a freshman-only game.
Ooh.
But instead of being out by us and by the school, which is in Woodstock, Illinois, which if you start here and go west for about an hour and a half, you get there.
Okay.
They had it down here at Montrose Harbor.
What?
Yes. They were playing, what was the name of the school?
It was a Chicago school?
I want to say Waldo. Does that make sense? Is there a Waldo
Where's
school
Waldo?
Right up by Loyola?
Walworth?
No.
Waldo. I've never heard of a Chicago Waldo. Public school?
Not necessarily, because we're a Catholic school, so we probably
Oh, all right.
Catholic
well, then I'm not sure. Then.
Might be like Waldo Academy or something along those lines.
I don't know the...
But anyways, they played a game tonight against the freshman team.
Nice.
So I thought, oh, well, we should go see... against... Oh, I'm sorry. Chicago Waldorf School.
Waldorf.
Big difference between Waldorf and Waldo, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
the
sure
Waldo
you...
School, they didn't play yet. The Waldorf School, they played. Anyway, so we thought, let's pack up and let's go down and see Jack play baseball. Because we don't get to see him very often. When he's playing on the sophomore team, he doesn't play that much. Because he's a freshman. So we came and watched him play. And then we went out to dinner, and then I went to Black Dog to go to sleep before the show.
Nice.
But the problem is, did you ever... like get an old brick building right off of Clark Street on a Friday night, a block from the firehouse.
Anywhere on Clark Street. Yeah, sure.
It's a little bit rough.
Yeah.
You can hear everything, every fight on the street, every drunken bachelorette party, and every siren. Mm-hmm. So that was an odd little nap I took.
Yeah, no, I tried the same thing today. I got up very early this morning. I had a wedding of a former student down south of Midway.
Okay.
On Cicero.
Excellent.
And they've been planning this for over a year. And so I think I got an early invitation, like from a year ago, that had a different time on it than the time. So I got there at 10:30, which is what the invitation said. And the person inside said, well, no, it's 11 o'clock, because they were still setting the tables. And as I'm sitting there waiting, I heard them say to someone else, well, yeah, the ceremony doesn't start till noon.
Now, I've been up today?
Since, this was today, yeah. So suffice it to say, I finally left around 2 to go back home. And, you know, I live far north side, so it was another hour and a half trip back home. Got home. Nobody else was home except me and Rufus. And it was about 4 o'clock. And between 4 and 6:30, I had... car honking incessantly, 2 doorbells knocking at the door, 2 knockings at the door, Rufus barking 3 times because he barks whenever there's a knock or someone from the family comes in or a doorbell rings, and the phone ringing, and my wife didn't turn down the phone, so at one point I'm listening to my voice on the message machine very loudly, saying, please leave a message. And, of course, guess what they left?
A message?
No message. So that was my 2.5 hours, and I got to 6:30. I says, I got to get up. I got to make my dinners and get ready and come in. And so you and I are sitting here with toothpicks on our eyelids, I'm sure.
Ah! You know what I got?
What?
I got a big gulp Dr. Pepper.
Oh, look at you.
400 calories of sugary goodness right there, Roger.
Yeah.
Keep me awake all night long.
This was the funniest thing. I'd never seen this before, and I didn't know the caffeine content in a Mountain Dew until this. It was my first teaching job at Downers Grove North, and I had a student who would come in first period with, what do they call it, like a 2-liter jug of Mountain Dew. He would carry around all day. I'm like, my God, that's too much sugar. I don't think he was worried about the sugar because the thing was gone by the end of the day. And I can and he was not the hyper type. He was very laid back, relaxed, very calm.
It's amazing how certain people can handle certain things differently than others. My brother, who has got to be over 50 years old, can still drink a big thing of Mountain Dew and eat a ton of Oreos.
Ooh.
And he still looks as skinny as he did when he was in his 20s. It's amazing to me.
It's not fair.
It's not.
No.
It's not. I agree.
I look at a picture of food and I gain 10 pounds. That's outrageous.
Well, quit eating the pictures.
I said I looked.
Supposed to look at them.
I looked. Then I put gravy
first
on
you,
it.
Then I put some gravy on it. That's good stuff. You know what we had tonight, though, before
what'd
I came down here?
Oh, you didn't.
We did. What do you think we did?
I don't know. Steak?
Chicago Institution. No.
Oh.
Kids, relatively
hot
fast
dogs.
Food.
Hot dogs, yeah.
So where'd we go?
Wait, you were
you
on the lakefront?
312-981-7200.
Yeah.
If you're going for a hot dog, where do you go
well,
for a hot dog?
I would say if you're driving
we drove in all the way from way west.
Well, you're either going to Gene and Jude's or Superdog.
You're right. One of the two.
All right.
Superdog is right on the way.
Right.
So we hit Superdog. But yeah. Gene and Jude's is the best hot dog stand
Chicago. I've got to go there.
You've never been to Gene and Jude's?
Well, it's not in my wheelhouse. It's not in the neighborhood. Superdog, yes. You want to know where we lived? We still live there. We've lived. Sorry.
You want to know where we lived? Where we still live?
Hold on.
Where we're living currently?
Over 32 years, we live two blocks from what used to be Flukey's Hot Dogs.
Okay.
Which, if you're talking about an institution,
Flukey's
Hot Dogs got its start on Maxwell Street.
Okay.
And then grew into a fairly large area hot dog emporium until the whole family sold it off. Mm. Their hot dogs were even sold in grocery stores.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
And now it's all gone?
It's
none of them exist?
All gone. I think there might be one left in a Walmart somewhere. You know, Walmart has, like, crazy things. I know. So I grew up with Flukey's because that's in my neighborhood. And then started going out once I learned how to venture away from the nest. Went to Superdog, and now I have kind of a family connection to Superdog.
Really?
Yep.
Somebody married into Superdog?
No, didn't marry. My dad's...
Somebody divorced out of Superdog?
No, my dad's current wife is childhood friends with the owners, with the original
Mrs.
people.
Dog?
Yeah.
Well.
With Maury and Flory.
Is that their names?
I believe it is. That's our first names.
Yeah. It's funny
because he's passed away.
Superdog is very different than Gene and Jude's.
Okay.
The hot dogs are very different. Superdog is a very thick hot dog. It's like you go to Gene and Jude's, you're automatically getting two hot dogs.
What?
You're not? You're only getting one?
Wait a minute. At Gene and Jude's?
At Gene and Jude's, that's right. You've never been there.
Yeah.
It's a thinner hot dog. It's more like a Portillo's size of hot dog.
I gotcha. Okay.
At Superdog, I think
it's a little thicker and a little crunchier.
They're meatier.
Yeah. They're meatier
at Superdog. So if you have two at Superdog, which my 14, almost 15-year-old son did tonight.
Wow.
When he walked out, he was hurting. I only had one because I remember last time.
With the fries.
It was really good.
With the fries.
However, afterwards. Yeah. Well, here's the thing about Gene and Jude's.
Mm.
And they do make fresh fries, I know, at Superdog. But at Gene and Jude's, you watch as you go through the line, and it's just a little dive. There's no chairs. There's no seating.
Oh,
you walk in. You wait in line. You get your hot dogs. You stand out on your bumper. You go along your merry way.
Mm-hmm.
That's your choices. But at Gene and Jude's, as you're sitting there, and it's just sparse, there's just these guys making the hot dogs, and then there's a guy with the peeled potatoes putting them up in the big metal thing, bringing them down right into a basket, right into the fryer, and then they wrap them in the hot dog. So they pile them on top of the hot dog and
they
wrap it up.
They pile it. That's what they do at
Superdog, sort of, except it's in a container and it's really separated. It's not all wrapped and rolled together like a orgy of fries.
Well, I
got to
eat when I pick them up on Thursday nights after bowling on the way home for a little midnight snack.
Mm-hmm.
I have to eat all the French fries to make room to get into
the hot dog.
Yeah. Because it's in the box.
Yeah.
So they put the hot dog in, then they slam the fries in on top of it.
What do you think about that little tomato thing they give you?
Superdog. At Superdog, I'm old enough not to eat my vegetables now.
But so do you tell them not to put that little, because you don't ask for it. You just get a plain mustard. Hot dog, they throw, but there's like a tomato wedge. It's not like the red tomato that you get on a Chicago dog. It's almost like a little piece of, I don't know, it's a green tomato. It's like a pickle tomato.
Yeah, no, I don't get it. I just.
You ask them to leave it off or they don't give it
to you? Yeah, I say just mustard. And that's all I get. I just get a hot dog with mustard.
Interesting. You need to get the tomato thing and try that out.
I don't need to eat vegetables.
Roger, I'm telling you.
Okay. One of these
days.
And
you can feel better about it.
Because I'm healthier now?
Yes. Then you say, but honey, I had the tomato.
Yeah. No, that ain't going to work.
Do you believe, Roger, that women are okay with their men cheating in any way, shape, or form?
No.
Shantae has booked a guest who we'll talk to in the 3 o'clock hour.
Okay.
Who will explain why she says more women are letting their husbands cheat.
That's so strong.
That's strong?
Wrong.
Wrong. Okay, yes.
Just wrong.
So I would think so, too. I don't know who these women are. I don't believe that's really a thing. That's the type of thing that... last week, Shantae, we were going to interview somebody about an island where people go to... Shantae, I'm going to have to ask you where you keep coming up with these ideas, by the way. Either it's saying something about you or it's saying something about what you think about me. And I'm not sure which yet. We don't know each other that well, but I'm going to figure this out. Because last week, she's telling me we're going to talk to somebody who runs an island that people go to cheat on their spouses. And then she comes back and goes, you know what? That was an April Fool's joke. We're not doing that.
Oh, no.
Which she fell for, apparently. But... so we didn't do that. But now this week, she's like, hey, we're going to tell you this woman about why women let their men cheat. And I'm thinking, what does Shantae know about me? Or think about me? What's going on here? But supposedly this guest, her name is Susie Johnson. She's going to explain. She's a life coach, we would say, right, Shantae? Type of a life coach. She says there's a trend where women are letting their men cheat. And. She is willing to offer, listen in first, see what you think, but she's willing to offer for our WGN Radio listeners a link to a free 2-hour audio coaching program on overcoming infidelity.
Ooh. Does that include a weekend on the island? Or?
Well, you're not going to overcome it if we're sending you away to cheat. Roger, you got it all backwards. So we're combining that with our segment on the nuns who are trying to close down the strip club.
I'm sorry.
We have the oddest theme show going here tonight that I've ever heard. You know, once Mr. Trump is president, we're going to have to change the whole way we work on these things. Did you see? All right. I do not like Ted Cruz one bit. I will just say that. I don't like Ted Cruz. But he was on Jimmy Fallon and made me almost like him. Did you see that, Shantae? Him on Jimmy Fallon? Would you do me a favor and pull up the audio of Ted Cruz on Jimmy Fallon? So Jimmy Fallon does a decent Donald Trump.
Yeah. And very good Donald Trump, I think.
Okay.
Well, for a comedian who's over-exaggerating some of the traits.
Well, who else is going to do a good impression? That's what a comedian does, isn't it?
Sure.
It's his job.
It's his job.
I think Daryl Hammond, I don't think, does a very good job on Saturday Night Live. I forget who they had do Trump at first. That somebody else
year?
On the show, yes, do Trump at first. And they both did it once with Trump on the show. But I thought the other guy did it better. Anyway, that's here and there. Ted Cruz is on with Jimmy Fallon, and he's going to be a guest on the show. So they do a segment first where Fallon is Donald Trump calling up Ted Cruz to give him advice on being on the show. We'll play that clip in a little bit.
Right.
It almost made me like Ted Cruz. Not like.
Right.
But stand.
But not as
like,
to
oh,
him
God, what is going
before.
On here?
Right. Okay.
After we do the break, we'll talk to it, because we got to get to the news here in a second. Also, Hillary and Bernie are really starting to go at each other.
Look, dude.
They're not going to be friends after this if this keeps up like this.
No.
And I really thought, I really enjoyed how it all started out, where they were very civil and cordial to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if it goes this long, and Bernie's like, do you think Bernie's, what do you think it more is now that they start getting at each other? Is it that they've had more debates than political history has ever allowed? Or do you think it's you get this far in the game, Bernie's had a great run, but he's still way behind if you count the superdelegates. So he's like, you know, and it's New York, which is a huge state, but it's kind of Hillary's, you know.
He's from there and she's served there.
He's from there, but she's more of a New Yorker, I would say, than Bernie is, right? I mean, I know he's from there, but can Bernie really claim it as a state? He's been in Vermont for how long?
long time.
Ever.
Yeah.
So I think that's tough. So is it more they're getting sick of each other, or is he just pulling out all the stops now and no more Mr. Nice Guy?
Well, I don't know. As far as that debate, the most recent one you're talking about, I was reading some reports that the audience was kind of allowed to
Yes, that's happened at a few of these events where now, because Colleen was saying that to me earlier this year, like, what is with people screaming and yelling at these debates?
Yeah.
I don't remember this, and I don't either. We got to quit letting, I'm sorry, but the news networks run these things. I don't understand why Fox and CNN and MSNBC are all in charge of these things. Where's Gwen Ifill? Didn't TT,
really?
Didn't like Channel 11 used to do these things, and they were like civil and like.
Right, PBS, you know,
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying let's bring back PBS, but for goodness sakes, let's bring back PBS. It's bad enough we got Trump screaming and yelling about his manhood. We can't have people like cheering him on and, you know, screaming and chanting and taking their shirts off, painting letters on their chest. God knows what's going on at these things. It's like WWE.
Or what's the mixed martial arts? MMA.
UFC. All the initials. It's like all the initials.
I don't know. I think it's all scripted. I think it's all a done deal. I'm
seriously?
Yeah, well, I mean, I still vote and,
how do
and
you
everything,
mean, how,
but I
explain
just...
Explain your little conspiracy theory there, Mr. Black Helicopter. What's all scripted and a done deal?
I think that there's too much back scratching going on right
now. So you
now.
Think while these candidates are all fighting with each other, you think there's some handshake? I don't think there is with Trump. Because here's the thing. If there was a handshake deal, A, he would never accept it unless it meant he was the leader of it. Too much of an ego.
Not necessarily.
Oh, you
not,
think Donald
I know he's got
Trump.
A huge ego, but not necessarily.
You think Donald Trump would go, yeah, I'll be in the lead the whole way, but then you guys sneak in at the end. I'm cool with all that?
No. No, he's not saying you sneak in on the end.
Then what's the handshake agreement?
The handshake agreement is that he is distracting people from the Democratic side, and they're doing their own thing, and then when it comes down to him and whomever for the final run, it's just all going to go to the Democratic side. I think the fix is in. That's just me.
Wait a minute.
Because this whole thing has been so surreal. It's not funny anymore.
So you think Donald is purposely tanking or ruining the Republican side so the Democrats win?
I think so.
Wow.
And I think that some legitimate contenders on the Republican side are gone already.
If he wanted to really do that, all he would have had to have done is run a third-party candidacy.
No, because he wouldn't have gotten the exposure that he's getting now as being part of the two mainstreams.
Yes, but... I do believe that any strong third-party candidate for either side would cause the other side to win.
I know. Let me just throw something out. Let's talk Chicago politics for a second.
Let's do that. No, let's not. Hold on. We have to hit a break, and we've got to go to news, and Glenn is going to tell us about a good hot dog. So hold that thought. You're going to tell us about Chicago politics soon. I'm late for the news, but Glenn's been holding on so nicely. We're going to take his call very quickly. Mr. Glenn, how are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Where do you get a good hot dog, though?
Well, it's not the best buzz hot dog in the world, but I drive truck and I stop at these old Aces, and they have a good sized hot dog, and it's wrapped in bacon.
At the so wait, on the tollway, the Oasis is on the tollway, so it's in a mobile gas station. Is that what? Oh no, wait, you're in All right, hold on, because I'm used to the Oasis that isn't there anymore on 90. They tore it down when they were doing the expansion, so now you can still get off.
Oh, that one's like.
There, but they're just gas stations and mobile mini marts. But you're talking about the cross the bridge Oases that have different restaurants?
I pull in at Lake Forest Oasis on 294.
So this isn't north. So this isn't a gas station hot dog that's sitting on a spit rolling for a day and a half. This is a quality meat establishment.
No, it's a gas station.
Oh, okay.
It's a good hot dog. It's not the best in the world.
It's wrapped in bacon, so is that then in a bun, or is the bacon the bun?
No, the hot dog is wrapped in bacon.
So no bun, or then into a bun?
And then you put it in a bun.
And then you put it in a bun. And then what do you put on a bacon hot dog? Mustard?
Mustard, ketchup. They have the normal condiments.
What about, let me ask you, Glenn, have you ever been so hungry that you get to the gas station and you see that one hot dog rolling and you think, you know what, there's no way this is good for me, but I'm going to go ahead and eat that hot dog?
No. No.
You do refrain from those?
No. Yeah, if they look older than me, I won't eat it.
That's a good rule of thumb, Glenn. Very smart. Yeah. We'll pass that along. Thank you so much for checking in. We appreciate it, buddy.
You're welcome. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Have a great morning. Okay. Welcome back in. Radio 720 WGN. Matt Babala here with you till 5 a.m. Max and Orion have the morning show. My friend Mike Steven does Outside the Loop Radio. I don't see Mr. Mike anymore. You know, when Mike started Outside the Loop Radio, which airs at 6 a.m., a full hour after we get off the air, we'd be finishing up the show, getting ready to pack up, and Mike come bounding in. Hour later, I got my show. He's all ready. Don't even see him in the parking lot, Noah, when I go.
No.
Probably rolls in. He's like Lou now. Probably rolls in a minute before his show.
Well, he lets Andy get things started.
Let's Andy.
You know, Andy gets things rolling. And
Andy does the first 20 minutes,
yeah,
and
right.
Mike mops up the rest, huh?
Yeah, right.
All right, so real quick, a few more comments on the hot dogs.
Okay.
224 told me that the little tomato thingy that I call it, that Superdog gives you, is called a tomatillo.
Ooh.
I have no idea if that's right, but that's what they said.
Okay.
For the guests we're going to have later, talking about why women let men cheat, and we'll find out if that's really a thing, which we don't believe.
Right.
Somebody asks, is it cheating if it's being allowed? If they tell you, you can, well.
Sorry.
I can understand the question because if, you know, if Roger, you had pledged to me for the rest of your life that you would never eat chocolate cake, and this was a sacred vow we had taken together, and I said, Roger, it's fine. Go ahead and eat the chocolate cake.
I wouldn't trust you.
But if I did, I couldn't be mad at you afterwards and say you cheated. You'd say, but you told me to.
Yeah, but you would get mad at me. Because you
I
would say, you can
cake.
Eat it, but you can't enjoy it. And I would enjoy it, and you'd get mad at me.
And, but then you'd lie to me and tell me you didn't enjoy it, right? You'd learn to make that face. I didn't like that at all. 847 says, y'all need to check out, and they did write y'all. Y'all need to check out Rand Red Hots in Des Plaines. Just like Gene and Jude's, think they are the same owner. Delish. That's from Kathleen. Thank you, Kathleen. Rand Red Hots in Des Plaines. There is a place in Des Plaines I haven't been to in a very long time because Colleen used to teach in Des Plaines called Paradise Pup.
And I know that place.
You do?
Yeah.
It's like a little shoe stand. It's tiny.
Yeah.
There's no place sitting there either, but there are picnic tables outside if it's warm enough. But you just walk in, you order, you head back outside. And I think it was like brothers that own it, and they were cool guys, and they made good food. The hot dogs, but also the burgers. Mm-hmm. And I think with the cheese fries, here's the thing, here's the key, Roger. Mm. Colleen is very finicky about her cheese fries.
Oh, really?
Because she doesn't want that cruddy nacho cheese sauce on it.
Yeah, that you squirt out
she
from
wants
the dispenser, yeah.
At Paradise Pup, at least back in the day,
yeah.
They would put Merck's, you know, Merck's cheese,
ooh,
M-E-R.
Yeah.
I want to say M-E-R-K-T, apostrophe S. Mm. Something like that.
Yeah.
Merck's cheese.
It comes in a tub.
Comes in a tub.
Yeah.
It's cheddar, but it's not gooey. It's like sort of granular-ish, the way you scoop it out. And so they melt that on there.
Oh, they just throw it on top of the fries and let it melt.
Heat them up.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, when I lived in Los Angeles and I worked at the Hollywood Hot Dog on Rodeo Drive.
Ooh, look at you, Mr.
We made these Southwestern barbecue cheese fries. And we'd make the fries and then I'd get shredded cheese, I'd pour it all over, and then I'd drizzle it with barbecue sauce and then put it under the heat lamp for a minute. And those would be
good. Those must have been like a meal in itself.
Delicious.
Now, we got to also throw out some respect to Wiener and Still Champion on Dempster in Evanston, our good friend Gus.
I've never been to Wiener and Still Champion.
Oh, you've got to try his dogs.
You know where
the fries are freshly made.
All right, next time, because this next year, I've got to take Jack up to a Wildcats football game.
Oh, okay.
We didn't go last year.
Yeah,
so
you got to stop off at Gus.
We'll stop at Wiener and Still Champion. Yeah. And then Jack asked to go tonight to the Wiener Circle.
Okay, right.
That's the one where they're mean to you, right?
I think so,
The Wiener Circle?
Yeah.
Because it was featured on an episode of Conan O'Brien when he was here in Chicago. And it was hilarious and vulgar.
Yeah.
So Jack wanted to go there. We're not taking the kids there. He's like, they have to be nice to the kids.
No way.
That reminds me. I have to tell you what my 15-year-old son said tonight. And he said to me, you're not going to say this on the radio, are you? And I said, oh, yes, I'm going to say this on the radio. So I was explaining that we're going to be talking to a lawyer tonight on the show who's representing the nuns who are trying to close down a strip club.
Right.
And Jack's looking at him. I said, yeah, well, you know, the strip club opened right next door to the convent, and the nuns don't like that this salacious stuff is going on right next door, and it's loud, and it's annoying, and all these things going on. And he looks at me, and let me preface this by saying, my son is a very smart young man. He gets great grades. He's kind of, I think of him, honestly, a lot like John Williams, and that he's really smart and might do great things someday, but he'll walk out the door without pants on sometimes because he doesn't think of the small things. That's my friend John Williams. John might cure cancer someday. He'll lose the formula on a piece of paper that was stuck to something and accidentally went out with like a grocery list. That's what'll happen.
Okay.
That's sort of my son, Jack. Great kid. I love him. Right. I think he's brilliant and smart and
witty. He doesn't sweat the small things.
No, not really. A towel has never been hung up in his life. You want to know where Jack's towel is after he took a shower? Go find the beanbag in his room. You'll see it laying there every night. Every night you say, Jack, hang up your towel. Okay, sorry. Just isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So I explain the story that we'll talk about in a little bit about these nuns and their fight to get the strip club closed. And he looks at me and he goes, well, why are they so anxious to close it down? Are they worried that, like, with that all that temptation there, they might join?
Oh.
And he meant it. He was dead serious for just a second. I looked at him, and I almost spit out my drink because this is a super dog, and I got a mouthful of Diet Coke at the time, and I almost started choking. And I looked at him, and I said, no, they're not thinking that the temptation will cause them to go become strippers. And I don't know if Jack's ever seen a nun in his life, even though he spent his entire life in a Catholic grade school and high school. But all I could picture is these 70-year-old women suddenly walking into the club going, you know, what the hell? Let's join them. Can't beat them. Let's do this.
Hey, Whoopi Goldberg and her nuns went into a casino in Vegas. Come on.
I don't think that's quite the same thing, but what the heck? They want to close it down.
That's the way to do it.
Here we go.
Come in with some axes. You know, start smashing the tables.
Oh, I thought we were going with perform.
No.
Join the club.
I don't think that'll work.
Joliet area hot dog, Joe's and Babe's are excellent, according to 630.
You know, that's one. Here's some of the things you don't talk about in public, right? You don't talk about the weather. You don't talk about weather. You don't talk politics. You don't talk.
Wait a minute. Whoever said don't talk about the weather? You don't talk about taxes, politics, or religion, I thought.
And sports.
Yes, you do.
No, because
you are no fun at all at a party. You have no idea what you're allowed to talk about.
That's why I sit in the corner and change the records at a party all by myself. So,
Roger goes to a lot of parties where records are being played these days.
I don't go to a lot of parties at all.
And they don't play records anymore.
I have a party in my head.
You could have said something worse.
I almost did, too.
Did you almost say that?
Almost.
Oh, chuckles. 773 says, Dino, and then in parentheses, Jimmy's, Grand and Pulaski, better than Gene and Jude's. You liar! Nothing beats Gene and Jude's. Nothing. I don't believe it. Mm.
Now, Gene and Jude's, do they grill their dogs or do they bake them in water, like steam them?
That's a good question. I would think they're steamed.
Okay.
Somebody sent me a link to Paradise Pup, too.
Okay.
To the Yelp reviews.
Now, have you had...
Paradise Pup open today, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
There you go.
1724 South River Road in Des Plaines.
I'll be sound asleep.
Good.
Have you had New York hot dogs? From the carts?
Let's see. We took Jack to New York a couple of years ago. I've been in New York several times. Have I had it off of a cart? I don't know if I ever got a hot dog off a cart in New York.
I did. Ages ago. I was in high school. And they were okay.
Did you get some kraut on it?
Nah. Just.
Have you ever had kraut on a dog?
No.
It's
I'm not
good.
Going to.
It's good, Roger.
I'm sure it is.
It is.
I lead a very sheltered life.
Clearly. Clearly that is the case. Okay.
Yes.
Now.
Politics.
Here's what we need to do. Chicago politics. Yeah. You had something to say about that.
Well, because this is in reference to my theory that there's a conspiracy going on in national politics. So you do know that there are stories in Chicago politics that a candidate who might be a little worried that they're not going to get the full support that they have in the past because maybe population has changed in their area, will run a candidate in the other party against the other party's regular candidate and diffuse all of the
momentum
oversight or anything else that might look bad against the incumbent. And then hopefully their candidate wins, and then they will then trounce that fake candidate in the general election. That's, there are those stories.
That's smart, isn't
Extremely
it?
Extremely smart.
That's brilliant. And that's kind of what I'm saying, is that if you want to, if Trump wants to get one of the other two elected, run as a third party candidate for the party that you don't want to win. Siphon off some of those votes. Be Ross Perot.
Yeah, well, it's I don't think it's going to happen only because...
Well, I don't know. They're not treating him fairly.
Well, I know.
You know, Roger, I'll make you a wager right now.
Okay.
We go to a contested convention,
right,
and they don't hand the keys to the Donald.
Right.
He's doing something to pay him back. He's not going, you're right, that's fine, I'll support Ted Cruz or I'll support Paul Ryan or
He's
whoever they come out
anyone.
With. He'll support himself as the third-party candidate.
I don't think it's going to happen.
So you think Donald Trump will be the candidate?
I think so. I think so.
If he's not, what happens?
If he's not,
they go to a contested convention. Nobody else can win the nomination, right?
Right.
I think mathematically, nobody else can win it. He's the only one with a chance left to actually get enough votes to win it, enough delegates.
Right.
So say he comes up, he goes there with 1,235, and you need 2,237.
Cuts a deal.
So he's two away.
They meet in the back rooms.
They meet in the back rooms, and what happens? Because nobody wants Donald to be their nominee.
But he's the 10,000-pound elephant in the room. You can't ignore it.
Right.
You're going to have to pay him off big time.
Well, how? I mean, he is rich. They're not going to hand him a check.
No.
What are they going to hand him? Agreements that'll help his businesses. No. I don't see him wanting a cabinet post.
Vice president.
I wonder if he does not. There's no way. No way Donald Trump says, sure, I'll follow Ted Cruz around everywhere.
He's a heart attack away.
He's two delegates away in our scenario. He's not going to give it up that easily if he really wants to be president. Right. He'll fight for it. Because if he threatens him, because here's what happens. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe we go to the backroom dealings and, you know, we can make this person the candidate or this person the candidate. Donald says, fine, do what you want. Then I go third party. And then guaranteed Hillary or Bernie is your president. Because I do think that's a guarantee then that the Democrats win because he got a lot of votes.
Yes, he did.
So if he says, I'm going third party, he's not going to win, but he's going to get enough votes to ruin the Republican Party for this election for sure.
Yeah.
So they can't, I don't think, mess with that.
But
unless they're
that's
saying,
the problem,
unless,
see?
Unless, here's the other thing that I do think could happen. We keep hearing about the Republican Party worried not only about Donald, but down the line, they're saying, down the ballot, they think this could be so toxic that they lose House seats and Senate seats and things like that in this election if he's their candidate. That maybe that pushes people so far away that we're even losing, you know, Congress, congressional seats.
And even losing
or state
seats,
things like that.
Right.
So would they actually go so far as to say, we cannot afford that? We know he'll go third party. Mm-hmm. We know then Hillary or Bernie is elected. That's okay as long as we keep control. Because quite honestly, it gives them something to fight against, right? I mean, in a weird way, other than they finally have, unless they can go another 4 years without hearing the Supreme Court nominee, they'd finally have to get around to that.
Right.
But I wonder if it would ever, they'd ever think it was so bad that they'd say, you know what, I know he's going to run third party, but we can't take a chance on him ruining everything here.
Their
Let's
hands
go ahead
are
and do
tied
it anyways.
Right now. The GOP's hands are tied.
They're not completely tied because if it goes contested, like it looks like it will, they could either fight against him or just say, you still got more than anybody. We're going to let you have it.
But how do they force him to give up his delegates? If he's got that many.
He doesn't have enough for the nomination. So
I understand.
They don't have to force him to give up anything.
How do you take, what do they do?
I don't, well, I don't know the inner workings of it, but if you don't win after certain, I don't know, does it keep having, do they have to
I'm not sure how many
keep
votes
re-voting
they have
until
to,
it happens? Or does
sometimes votes, I don't know if they've put a limit on it since the old days, But some votes have gone on 10, 15, 20 votes. And it keeps going back and forth.
They don't need his. If he has less than 50%, they just need every other one. If he gets right up to the brink but doesn't have it, then if they can get all of, you know, Kasich's and Cruz's and Rubio's and Bush's and Carson's, if they can get them all together. But Ben Carson's come out in support of him. That's if Ben Carson has a few delegates and he gets them to go to Trump, I don't know. I don't know.
And then who do they, if they take the delegates of all the other candidates, who do they put them towards?
Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan has said, no.
I'm not going to do it.
That's right.
What else is he going to say? Could he, is there any political scenario where Paul Ryan comes out now and says, if it goes to a contested convention, I would happily consider becoming the candidate? That would sound terrible.
Right.
He can't say that. So he came out and said, no, I could never do that. Until they beg and plead and say there's no, you know, I mean, I don't think that precludes him at all. I believe he's honest saying he doesn't want to and doesn't want to come to that. But I know in his heart he knows that, well, hey, if my party really needs somebody and everybody feels like, hey, this is what we have to do, I don't see him saying, we can't do that. It must be Donald Trump.
Interesting scenario. It's I'd be more interested in the whole thing if this election hasn't taken the last 50 years of my life.
You just got to make it to November. Think of how far away that is. It'll be gone in a flash. But think of how far away that is.
It is. It is. We got a long ways to go still.
We do have a long ways to go. All right, coming up after the news, we'll stick with Trump for a minute because Shantae has queued up the Jimmy Fallon as Donald Trump with Ted Cruz skit. So we'll touch on that after the news. We still have nuns closing down strip clubs. We have we have other things to get to. And our old buddy Mike Farron. Do you remember Mike Rogers? Do you ever know Mike when he was here?
Yes, I believe. I believe he and I bumped into each other at some point over the last 10 years.
So Mike produced Sports Central for a long time here, filled in a lot and did great sports reports. Then he left GN and went to SiriusXM's MLB channel, and he did shows there for a number of years. And now, this year, for the first year, Mike is the pre- and post-game host for Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. Mike got his big break today. I don't know how or why it happened. I don't know if it was planned or an illness, but Mike got to call the game on the radio tonight.
I saw his post on Facebook. Yeah. He was giddy like a kid in a candy store.
So happy for him. He's a really good guy, worked really hard for a long time. Bounced around, did all the things they tell you you got to do, you know, you have to do. And now he's getting his big break and he called a major league game and they won. That's cool. It's the Matt Bubala Show. Radio 720 WGN. Roger, wait, what are you saying the high's going to be the next 2 days? Today and tomorrow?
50 on Saturday, 60 on Sunday.
Is that by the lake?
Well, no.
Fahrenheit yourself.
You know what? I was on Cicero, south of Midway yesterday.
Right.
And it was a lot warmer than it was when I got close to the drive. It seemed like it dropped like 15 degrees.
Okay.
But that's their official. That's the official.
So the National Weather Service is saying.
Here we go.
Saturday's high. Today's high.
Saturday high near 58. Sunday near 60. Monday near 61. Tuesday 54. Wednesday 59.
All right. So I have the Weather Channel, my little Weather Channel app that I use. And that's the zip code I put in is for downtown here. Now, your temperatures are probably O'Hare because that's the official.
Right.
But they have today as a high of 66 and tomorrow as a high as 70.
No. For downtown? No.
Yep, for River North.
It's going to be nippy along the lakefront.
About that. In West Dundee, Illinois, where I'm from, they're saying high of 78.
Yeah, now it's going to be a lot hotter out there. Sure.
78, Roger. Yeah.
Well, you don't have the north winds coming in off the lake, the northeast winds.
78. Degrees.
All right, so what? You're going to be in your
Happy place is where I'm going to be.
Yeah,
I'm going to be thrilled. We got baseball all weekend. We're going to be outdoors in the sun.
Nice.
It's going to be awesome.
Look at that.
It's going to be nice.
So you know what you got to do? Well, it's too late now. But I was thinking,
what do I got to do? Well, you got to lose 30 pounds so you can take your shirt off. That's what you got to do. Get on that,
dude. More like 80 pounds for me. No. You need to, like, on the way home tonight or in the, you know, this morning.
Yeah.
Stop off at Gene and Jude's, pick up a couple of bags worth of stuff.
They are closed by the time we get out of here.
I know.
But if any listeners nice. Driving by Gene and Jude's and headed downtown,
yeah, pick up a few, get a couple bags worth.
Roger will pay you back. I don't have any cash, Roger. I can't help.
Wait a minute. Am I? I'm like your.
You're always.
I'm your flunky.
Cash.
I always carry the cash.
You're
for
old
you.
School. You carry the cash. You're the muscle,
right.
Roger.
You're right.
You're the muscle on the show.
I got the money. Yeah, let me rip off a couple of singles for you.
Peel off those singles, big spender. By the way, yes. So we brought up baseball because the boys have baseball all weekend.
Right.
And my little guy. So I'm getting to the end, Roger, of my coaching career. I have 3 years left, and then it's all going to be over because my older son Jackie's in high school, and I don't coach him now anymore ever again. And I finished up with his travel team last year, and I'm done coaching Jack, and he's thrilled to death. And now Michael and Tommy have 3 more years till they get to be thrilled to death that I'm done with them. Okay. But they entered the majors level of Little League Baseball this year. Mm. And that's the level where eventually kids could play for the chance to go all the way to Williamsport, right?
Wow.
So they're only 10. So their all-star team is still a couple years away from that. But if they make their all-star team this year, they would have the chance to go all the way to a state tournament and play for state. And then same thing next year as 11-year-olds. And then 3 years from now, or 2 years from now, depending on how you're counting, would be their final year at the majors level when, if they make all-stars, they could compete to go all the way. But here I am, you know, they've reached their final division of Little League Baseball that they'll play in, and so it's kind of cool and bittersweet. But now they're playing in this majors division. They're only 10, and so there's 12-year-olds in the division. And it was an interesting year for Jack when him and his friends got there, and now it's going to be an interesting year for these guys because they're 10, so they're still pretty small, even though they're good. But there's, you know, some 12-year-olds are men when they're 12.
That's right.
You know, we're playing against kids that are taller than I am, and I'm short, so it's not a big deal, but these kids are tall.
Yeah.
You know, a good 2 feet, 100 pounds more than some of these 10-year-olds. And so my son Tommy, who does not love baseball, he's willing to go to baseball if it means he gets to drive the tractor or rake or, like, do some construction things. So that's how I got to keep him involved. But he's pretty good because he's strong. And he's a lefty, and he throws the ball really hard.
Oh, nice.
And you never know if he's going to throw a strike or not. But when he does, he throws it pretty well. So he pitched for the first time against 12-year-olds the other night. And in the first inning he pitched, this 12-year-old came up, the nicest young man named Connor Wyteska. He's 12. His father's the chief of police in West Dundee.
You don't strike that guy.
So I couldn't have Tommy hit him in the first pitch. Normally I'd say, Tommy, you take him out. You own the inside corner. You take him out like it's Rizzo. But I thought, you know what? I don't want to get arrested.
No.
I tend to speed a little, so we better be nice. So, and this, you know, Connor has grown up, and he's a big, strong kid now. And the funny thing is about Little League Baseball, you play on the same size field pretty much from the time you're 6 till you're 12. And when you're 10 playing, it still seems like a decent size field. When you're 12, it seems like you're playing on really small fields.
Yeah, right.
So these kids, they hit a good line drive. It's going out of the park. And so Tommy had this, like, 10-pitch battle with Connor Wyteska.
Ooh.
Now, part of the battle was Connor was so far ahead of the pitches that he was following them into the third base dugout.
Oh, wow.
But still, he was fighting him off. And Tommy kept getting him to miss or foul it off. And he threw about 10 pitches until finally Connor lit one up right over the left field fence.
Ooh.
Tommy gave up his first dinger.
No.
As Connor was rounding the bases, Tommy jogged out to short and gave him a high five.
What?
Yep.
Look at that. Now we're talking. You done good there, Matt.
They were raised with good sportsmanship in Tri-Cities Little League. We're very proud of that.
That's the way it's supposed to be done.
I was happy about that. I think Tommy was finally happy the bat was just at over.
Yeah, right. Can I go home now, Dad?
The funny thing is, so my other son, Michael, had pitched earlier in the game.
Uh-huh.
And Michael does not throw the ball hard. At all.
Oh, okay.
It's deceptively slow.
Mm-hmm.
Michael struck Connor Wyteska out. Connor almost slipped a disc swinging and missing these pitches because he could not figure out how you wait that long.
Were they high-breaking curves that took an hour to get down?
No, they just kept dropping down off the plate because there wasn't enough air left to keep the ball in the air. It was just like, you know, like when a plane suddenly breaks up midair, Michael's pitch just starts heading towards the dirt. And Connor, I think, fouled one off that almost took out somebody behind him. He was so far ahead of it. And so Michael struck him out and just laughed like, how in the world did I do that? So that was a nice moment for him. But we're having a lot of fun playing Little League.
That's wonderful.
It was a nice, warm, sunny night out. You. It was gorgeous.
That reminds me of the old days. You know, just playing. We'd run down. We had we grew up in what's the area called Ridgeville Park District.
Mm-hmm.
And our house was down the alley from three large fields. Mm-hmm. Separated by streets, and there would be like five baseball games going on every day on the weekends.
Just kids running out. Parents don't know where they are.
No, we'd grab our
bats.
Come back
when the street lights come on.
Mitts. We'd run out there. Someone would bring a ball, and it would either be a hard ball. It would be a 16-inch.
Oh.
We even had 12-inch.
Okay.
Softballs. With no mitts.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, we didn't know. I broke many a window.
And a finger or two, I would
on
think.
This. Well, I was always breaking stuff. Yeah. But everyone was always playing baseball.
Yeah.
And, man.
You don't see that
late
anymore.
Summer afternoon, playing with a bunch of guys, just barely making enough guys on each team to...
Yeah.
Fill the field, kind of.
Yeah, well, you just play right field out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Got to pull it or else you're
left
out.
Left field out if it was a lefty. Lefty, yeah. So, and, man, those were the good old days.
Yep.
Grasshoppers out in the field.
Where I grew up in Munster, Indiana, right behind our house was, I think it was St. Nicholas. It was like a Greek, or it was a Byzantine.
Byzantine
yeah, church.
Sure.
Great old church.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big parking lot. And so Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoons, after services were over, there's a big empty parking lot with a nice brick wall.
Oh, perfect.
And we'd play right there.
Yeah.
And, had a nice fence about, I don't know, 150, 200 feet away. You'd try to poke it over. And those were good times.
Good times, buddy.
All right. Let's jump back to those were the good times. And now the future, President Trump. We've got Jimmy Fallon had Ted Cruz on the other night, and they were talking. So the setup is Jimmy Fallon does a pretty good, as Roger said, President Trump, and he was calling Mr. Cruz to give him some advice before he went on the show.
Hello?
Congratulations. You've just been called by Donald Trump.
Oh, hello, Donald. What a pleasant surprise.
Are you watching the Democratic debate?
Nope. I'm watching The Princess Bride for the 843rd time.
Inconceivable. Well, you're missing some great stuff. They just nailed Hillary for flip-flopping on trade. She was going back and forth, this way, that way, this way, that way. It was like watching her swipe a MetroCard at the subway.
Okay, Donald. Well, you know, I've got to run now.
Wait. Look, I know you're about to be a guest on The Tonight Show. I've been on that show many times. So I thought I'd help you out and do a little pre-interview.
Well, that's a very generous offer, Donald. I appreciate you being the bigger man.
Oh, I'm the bigger man. With the bigger hands. And the bigger... You can't see me, but I'm pointing at my Trump Tower.
I'm really glad not to be on FaceTime right now.
Question one, how did you win all the delegates in Colorado without anyone even voting?
Well, Donald, last year, the Colorado State GOP, they voted to cancel their statewide primary and instead to hold district conventions to elect their 34 delegates. We've known this all along. And I won those elections fair and square.
You know what I think? I think the people of Colorado did vote, but they were so high, they completely forgot. And let's face it, anyone that high definitely voted for me. So basically, I won Colorado. Okay, here's another question Jimmy might ask. What is your stance on immigration?
Well, Donald, first of all, we need to put an end to President Obama's amnesty.
Well.
And I believe we need to secure the border once and for all.
Once and for all.
And start enforcing the rule of law.
Law spelled backwards is law. Yes. Next question. The New York primary is on Tuesday. You've already won your home state of Canada. Now you're in my home state of New York City, and people are still mad. They're mad at you for saying that they have, quote, New York values. What did you mean by that?
Look, Donald, I'm not going to pander to New Yorkers. I love New York City. It is the greatest city in the world with the best-looking audiences in the entire world. So when I said New York values, I was merely trying to say that I value New York. Except I was saying it backwards, the way Yoda would say it.
I love Yoda. I watch her every morning with Kathy Lee. It's fantastic.
Well, and they love whining almost as much as you do, Donald.
Classic, Ted. Listen. While you're here in New York, let me give you some advice. First, if you're on the street, walk fast. No one likes a slow walker. Are you writing this down?
Hold on. Let me get my pen.
He pours himself like a big glass of scotch right here or something,
Ted,
instead of getting
pen,
a pen.
Ted, did you get your pen? Ted? Ted, did you get your pen?
Got it.
Okay. Last question. Why do you think you should be the GOP nominee?
Well, listen, from the very beginning, we've run a positive campaign. And even though it's taken a while, I firmly believe that we have unified the GOP.
So have I. It just so happens that I unified them against me. But I still unified them. That counts. Okay?
All right, Donald. My interview with Jimmy Fallon's about to start.
Are you going to do a lip sync battle?
I certainly hope not.
Well, if you do, people love it. They're fantastic. They're huge. If you do a lip sync battle, I've got the perfect song for you. Cue the music. Work, work, work,
work. And then he starts dancing. So that's Ted Cruz having his human moment on Jimmy Fallon. Now, I don't know if enough people watch Fallon that makes any difference for him. He's certainly not going to win New York. And he's not going to get out of the New York values thing.
Right.
I mean, I don't know why he doesn't just say, he should have said something like, hey, when I say New York values, I'm talking about all the liberals in New York, not our good conservative voters here who are going to vote in the GOP primary. I'm talking about the people Donald really aligns with when for so many years he supported this and that and this and that and this and that. And, you know, lambast him as not being a true conservative. That's all he's got to do.
Sure.
But I didn't think it's a little late for him there. I think Donald's going to win his home state. Of course.
I have to say, for a scary, I shouldn't say scary, but for a second, he sounded like George Bush.
Ted Cruz?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Right about in the middle, all of a sudden, I said, whoa, wait a minute, that sounded like George Bush.
I can't hear somebody else in him because all I can think of is to look at him and see like some weird combination of Eddie Munster and the Count from Sesame Street.
Oh, yeah. Or Count Chocula.
Or Count Chocula.
Yeah. The nose is what does it.
And like right? The beady eyes. He's kind of like got the eyebrows raised over the eyes all the time. You never really see his eyes, it seems like. Well, we've got that to look forward to still, everybody.
Yep. Like you said, a long way to go.
It'll be here before we know it. Real quick before we take the break, I looked up a quick story on CBS about what happens if nobody has enough votes.
Oh, okay.
If nobody has the delegates. A contested convention happens when no single candidate has secured a majority of the delegates ahead of the convention this summer. So the nominee will be chosen by the delegates who come to the convention on a series of one or more ballots. So 2,472 delegates in total for the Republicans. Magic number becomes 1,237 delegates. Last time Republicans had a contested convention that went beyond the first ballot. It was back in 1948 when they nominated Thomas Dewey. That was the Dewey defeats Truman year on the Tribune. Dewey won the nomination on the third ballot. For Dems, the last time was in 52 with the nomination of Adlai Stevenson. The last time a candidate successfully emerged out of a contested multi-ballot convention and then won the presidency was Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1932. In 76, Gerald Ford didn't have enough delegates for the nomination ahead of the convention, but was able to secure enough on the first ballot to edge out Ronald Reagan. In 1984, same scenario emerged on the Democratic side. Former Vice President Walter Mondale was 40 delegates short of the nomination, but support from superdelegates put him over the top, so he didn't have to go to a multiple ballot fight with Colorado Senator Gary Hart. Is anyone eligible to be the nominee if a contested convention actually occurs? According to this, the RNC in 2012 introduced Rule 40, which states that the only candidates eligible to be in contention at a contested convention are candidates who have the support of a majority of delegates in at least 8 states across the map.
Okay.
In theory, this means that even in the most crowded and fractured of fields, the most candidates that could be included on a convention ballot is 6. So far, this was a while ago. At the time, Trump had a majority of delegates in 6 states. But they also say if things got truly crazy, someone else could step in. And if he or she could convince the majority of delegates in at least 8 states to support them on the convention floor, they too could be eligible for consideration as a candidate during the balloting process. Also, they write, keep in mind that the Republican National Committee could propose changes to these rules at any point between now and the convention.
Sure.
And then at the beginning of the convention, they'll vote on the new rules.
Right.
So they could change it to do whatever they want as long as they vote on it beforehand. On the and they said, because somebody texted, after the first ballot, aren't people free to vote for whoever they want? It's a little more complicated than that. This says on the first ballot, the vast majority of delegates are bound to vote for a specific candidate, which is usually based proportionally on the election results in the state they're from. That means that among bound delegates, the numbers will look fairly similar to delegate counter maps that have been tracking the delegate fight throughout the process. But although Republicans don't have superdelegates like Dems do, there are still more unbound delegates than you'd think. Some states, for example, don't bind delegates to vote for a specific candidate. Plus, state party chairs and RNC committee members also get to serve as delegates for their states. Depending upon the dynamics going into the convention, party leaders could want to wrap up the process as quickly as possible and vote for Trump, or they could also team up collectively to stop Trump or another candidate from reaching the 1,237 on that first ballot. But it gets complicated because each state's delegate selection process and rules for bound and unbound delegates are different. After the first ballot, first ballot, if no candidate were to receive the required 1,237 delegates, the voting would head into a second round. At this point, many more delegates would be unbound, meaning they could vote based on their personal preference and not based on the candidate they were previously compelled to back on the first ballot. But when delegates are released depends on their home state rules. So it's not like everybody's free. It depends on the state they came from and what the rules are from that state. It might say you have to vote for who we elected no matter what. It might say you're free after the third ballot.
Right.
It says this could get pretty chaotic. Once balloting gets past the first round, it becomes a bit like a caucus where delegates can work to convince others to switch over and join their candidate. It also means the candidates and their campaigns will pursue these delegates and work hard to get them on board. This could be a lengthy process given that the delegates won't be selected until county and state conventions later this spring. How many can it go? Technically, it could go as many as it needed to, though it's unlikely to go past a few. But in 1924, they say, Democrats set the record for number of ballots at a convention, 103.
Ooh.
Could you imagine if we went 100 ballots?
That's a long convention.
Yeah, that would be. So I don't think it'll go quite that long, but it could be pretty interesting.
And here's
interesting
what I miss.
Cleveland. Yes.
I miss. I'm a little bit older than you.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
A little bit. I remember the conventions in the 60s,
okay,
where they actually meant something.
Well, this one's going to mean something.
Well, I know, but it's like it. Nothing was determined ahead of time. They would go through several rounds, and there would be a lot of time in between each state because you know how they do the roll call. And they and states defer,
right.
And they
well, why did it mean something more in the 60s? Were we not voting in the same way? Were they not bound to vote for who the state voted for?
Well, I'm not sure what the rules were back then. You mentioned rules that just came up recently, so it's ever evolving. But it just seemed to me, being the young person I was, not used to many conventions,
right,
that it was more interesting and informative to watch. And now you can't see the conventions on regular TV covered gavel to gavel like they used to. People don't watch. People don't care anymore
about
it.
But I guarantee as long as you have cable, there'll be somebody carrying
a
gavel.
Well, yeah, someone on cable, sure. But it's just, it doesn't have the panache that it used to. It doesn't have the intrigue.
It might this year.
Yeah, that is
true.
We'll
see.
That is
maybe
true.
On both sides, for goodness sakes. All right. Again, Roger, you made us late for the news. Hold on. It's the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720, WGN. From a story Shantae gave me, thrashing out the details of their new marriage contract with online relationship coach Susie Johnson, the wealthy couple who have been wed for 12 years leave their hour-long Skype session feeling satisfied. The husband agrees they can have a fifth child, while the wife consents to an infidelity clause allowing him to cheat with other women on a strictly annual basis. They agreed to a weekend amnesty where the guy can do what he wants for just one weekend a year, recalls Johnson, who runs the Dallas, Texas-based GoAskSusie.com. In return, she gets the bigger family she craved. According to Johnson, such arrangements are increasingly common as a growing number of women agree to, quote, widen their monogamy boundaries, unquote, and embrace a marriage of convenience where it's just the husband who strays rather than an open marriage where both sides get to cheat. Joining us on the phone right now is that very Susie Johnson. Good morning, Susie. How are you?
Great, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, but I don't get this is not the world I live in, Susie. I don't understand what's going on here. Why in the world would women say, okay, that's good for you, that's fine? I just don't understand what the reasoning would be. I mean, is your marriage that strong if to get a fifth child, the guy's saying, fine, I'll have a fifth child, but you got to let me stray?
Okay, so Matt, there was a couple of pieces missing from the story.
Okay.
That might add some context. First of all, I deal with infidelity recovery.
Okay.
So this couple had already, this man had already had an indiscretion.
Okay.
And it was a couple of years ago. So it was something they had already been in the recovery process. And so that's something that's really important for people to understand. These are not couples that are just wandering around bored. These are couples that have been through something devastating and are asking the question, what can we do to prevent this and not have this happen again? So not only was this really an agreement, it was also kind of an amendment as well to a previous indiscretion.
Well, that's interesting. It says also in this article that this is becoming increasingly common, women, quote, widening their monogamy boundaries. You would say then that's in when they're going to counseling after this has happened. How do we figure out how to move on from this?
So that would be my perspective, because the couples that I work with, I'm exclusive to this particular situation. So the couples that I'm seeing, this is as a result of having gone through something as devastating as this. And they're saying to themselves, okay, divorce is not an option for us. So if we take divorce off the table, what else are we looking at?
It seems oddly, though, Susie, like the guys, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's no way to go along with marriage. How are we going to punish what you just did? Mm-hmm. But that they cheated, got caught, whatever, and now, okay, well, let's talk about this. All right, well, let's do this. You get to cheat once a year. The guy's going to be like, this is a trick, right? I'm sure it takes them a while to agree to that, because they're like, as soon as I say yes to this, you're going to say, can't agree to that. Why would you say that? Or something, you know, it seems like a trapdoor is about to be pulled underneath them. Why would women say, this makes sense. I mean, if you're going to allow him to cheat, how is it not written in? Because the way you stop men from agreeing, okay, that's great, I get to cheat, is to say, sure, you get to cheat, and so do I. Because then most guys would go, well, wait a minute.
And so you have to be clear, this is probably less than 5% of my couples that would even choose an option like this.
Okay.
And sometimes this is kind of, you get to that place where you're trying everything. You're trying everything. Like I said, divorce is not an option. You're taking that off the table.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about less than 4 to 5% of couples that would even choose this as an option. The other thing to remember, though, is she's getting something out of it as well. She's just not that this particular couple that's being quoted in the New York Post. For her, it wasn't cheating. That wasn't what she wanted. So this is a negotiation. It's not just a matter of he's getting what he wants, but she's also getting something that she considers to be of equal value.
But do you feel weird negotiating something like that, Susie, where it's, okay, you can do that once a year, but we have another child added to our family? I mean, you know what? I was an accident, and I've known that for a long time, but I was never so much of an accident that I would someday, God forbid, find out, well, we had you because mom said I could cheat once a year as long as I agreed to a fifth child. I mean, that's a weird way to say we had our fifth child.
I'm not sure that will come up in conversation.
Hopefully not, I guess. You never know. You get to the holidays, people are drinking.
That's a good point. And I'll say this. I mean, I get what you're saying, because when you're on the outside of a situation, it's very easy to say, oh, that looks like this or that looks like that.
But yeah,
there's a lot of contributing things that are going on here, and it's not – they didn't arrive at this with sweetness and light. This came out of something else, and these two are dealing with a lot more than the average couple. They're also really – there's a lot at stake for them financially. There's just a bigger picture than you can just paint in an article. But it's a titillating outcome,
yeah,
to say the least. And I will say, my couples that do start down this path, not every couple – that ends up with trying to negotiate something like this, does it work out for? For some couples, they start and realize this is not what they want. But as a coach, it's not my job to figure, to tell couples what. So I'm not on the what committee. I'm on the how committee. So they decide what, and then together we figure out the how.
This article, at least for the purposes of this article, was all about men. If men are cheating with women, then there's somebody else out there who's probably cheating, unless these men are all finding single women or prostitutes. Have you had to do the same situation with a woman who's straight? I mean, I can't imagine the marriage where the guy's like, okay, honey, you can cheat once a year, but I get to play golf every Saturday then, or something like that.
See, now that would be of equal value, but I see what you're saying. And the answer to the question is no. So, typically, this is going to be the female in this particular situation that will give that kind of allowance. Men will do what you started out the show saying. For example, I was working with a couple just yesterday, and his wife has strayed twice. And my question to him is, what do you need to recommit to this marriage? What do you have to see? What do we have to do? And he said, well, we would have to even the score. So for him, the answer, the thing that would allow him to recommit to the marriage again is for him to be able to stray twice. And I have to tell you that, in my experience, doesn't work.
I was going to ask you, is there any chance that that's going to work out? Well, what about in your experience with these other things where she's getting the fifth child and he can cheat once a year? Is she really going to say, okay, that's fine, when women commit to, basically saying it's a marriage of convenience. Maybe I love him. Maybe we still are intimate, but I know he's like this and I'm just going to be okay with it as long as I don't know and he's being smart about it, et cetera, et cetera. How many marriages can that really work in where somebody's going to be able to handle that emotionally?
That's a great question, and not a lot, because we are by nature very territorial and possessive, and jealousy is an issue, and all of this, you open yourself to a lot of risk. Like I said, it's a small percentage of couples that would even consider something like this, but I don't have the statistics to back up what for the couples that do go down this road what their success looks like. But what we do know is if you follow the traditional approach to marriage, monogamy, you probably have about a 40% chance of infidelity. If you follow the traditional model to marriage, you have a 50% chance of divorce. So we have statistics for the other side, but we don't have statistics for this side.
So about 40% of marriages at some point have some sort of infidelity.
Yes.
And
what the statistics are saying.
Is the percentage much greater of men cheating versus women cheating?
You know, that's a very paradoxical type question, because who are they cheating with?
Right.
So here's the deal. And I know your male listeners, they might be like, oh, no. But the odds of being busted are far higher for the male.
Because the men aren't smart enough to catch the women?
I'll tell you, when a guy calls me up and says, I suspect my wife is cheating, 9 out of 10 times he's right. Because by the time he's suspicious of it, something's probably going on.
Yeah. Because we pick up on things a little later. And what about when women are suspicious? There's a smaller percentage just because they're...
You know, there's a chance that that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. Because the alarms... Women's detection systems are way earlier. So, and what's really nice, not that it's nice, but what's really interesting as well is when they have that early intuition, sometimes it's very, very much about the beginning of it. Where the male might catch it, it's already in the later stages. Women can sometimes pick it up as early as when it's just in the flirting stage.
Mm. Mm-hmm. In the relationships you've worked with, as a general rule, do you believe that couples can overcome infidelity and an instance of infidelity?
Absolutely, and that's all I've done for the last 15 years, is help couples to repair trust, rebuild, but perhaps most importantly, redefine how they want to move forward. Because by the time there's an infidelity, that's symptomatic. So the analogy I would use is, imagine that you have a house with broken windows. Infidelity comes in through the broken window. Mm-hmm. So a lot of couples, what they'll do is they're aware of their broken windows, but nothing's happening, so they don't fix them. You know, they may patch it a little bit, but they really don't fix it. And the broken window is an analogy for something like someone's working too much, or we're not communicating, or we're not having sex. Those are broken windows. So the repair process is about identifying those broken windows, fixing them, and then talking about how do we handle this type of stuff in the future? How do we infidelity-proof? How do we temptation-proof? And 95% of my clients are going to do that with their monogamy intact. 5% are going to say, maybe monogamy itself needs to be addressed.
Interesting. And what percentage of couples do overcome it and stick it out, would you say? I know you said a lot can, but is that something that a woman or a man can really get past? You know, even not just these couples that are working out this, this deal where you get to do it. I know that's a very tiny percentage, but it's a titillating headline, so that's why it's out there. But when this happens, 5 years down the road, is that still in the back of their mind all the time, or are couples truly able to get past and move on?
So the answer to the question is yes. So you asked it in two parts. So I'll take the first part. What percentage of couples? So statistics say that immediately upon being discovered, 1/3 of couples are going to divorce. Immediately. So the what I'm dealing with are the other percentages that have decided, you know what, it's not, you know, we got to try. And the answer to the question of 5 years down the road, it's about forgiveness, which is probably the core of what I really work with. It's helping people to achieve true forgiveness. How do you truly allow the past to be over and move forward? And how do you bury the hatchet and not dig it back up? And so that's that's the risk you take when you roll the dice of infidelity. You take the risk as to whether or not this is something that you've introduced that your marriage can't recover from. For some people, and I will tell you, the difference maker, Matt, is two things. what's at stake, and who are the stakeholders. So there's a lot at stake. For example, if they have three or more children, if for them it's a religious thing and divorce is not an option, if they've got a family business, my celebrity client, if they've got a reputation, if they're in politics, if you see that there's a lot at stake, the motivation to truly forgive is higher.
I would imagine one other thing that will be a telltale sign of whether they're going to make it or not is, does that person cheat again? Because I would think that maybe I can forgive this once. That was a one-time thing. Okay, I swear I'll never do this again. I'm sorry I made a mistake. Blah, blah, blah. But then 2 years later, they find out something more. And what is the percentage where that happens? I mean, once somebody cheats once, what's the likelihood that they're really going to feel so terrible and apologize and never do that again? Or is it very likely that at some point down the road, they'll do that again?
So there's the old cliche of once a cheater, always a cheater.
Right.
And I would honestly tell you that's perhaps the most damaging piece of information that floats around out there. That and the other one about Trump, that this once a cheater, because that's perhaps one of the biggest obstacles. It's people not realizing that you can have a one-off. You know, anyone can fall from temptation and fall from a pedestal and crash. You know, anybody can do that. It's distinguishing the pathological from the person that truly either got seduced or lured or just, you know, fell into this on a unconscious kind of way. That's the hard thing, is to pinpoint the difference between the two categories. And it's hard to tell on the front end, but there are signs. So there's a difference between a serial cheater and someone who got lured into temptation or fell off a pedestal.
And is there a difference between a fling and an affair? And emotionally, is there a difference? My old friend John Williams, who's a host here, used to say, I'd rather find Brenda in bed with somebody than out to lunch with somebody. Then that's an emotional connection that's different than she had a need and had a fling with somebody. He felt like I could understand and forgive that more than, oh my God, you're spending this quality time with this person. You're really involved with this person.
Yes. And kudos to him for that statement, because it really points to a deeper truth, especially in the female end of it. So that's, you know, an emotional affair can be far more damaging than a physical one. And especially for women, because for women, it's the emotional investment. Once they emotionally transfer from one male to the other, that's far harder to overcome.
So once a woman cheats in that way, that's tougher for them to come back, maybe to want to come back?
It is really challenging, and it puts them in a very, very difficult place, because they've got the children, perhaps, you know, and then there's the emotional transference that's happening. So for women, the stake and the price is higher, because it's very difficult for them to cross that line in the first place, just because of, you know, social and just the way we're raised. It's difficult. So whatever the thing that usually gets them to cross the line is some kind of heavy emotional investment, and that's the danger, I think. People underestimate the power of emotion. They really do. And so they think, oh, I can just, you know, grab a little piece of it here, but I won't get all this negative stuff. And you don't get to cherry pick, you know?
Susie Johnson is the co-founder of the Marriage Wellness Institute, as well as the facilitator of GoAskSusie.com. I understand that for our WGN radio listeners, you're willing to give them a link to a free 2-hour audio coaching program on overcoming infidelity. You need to go to GoAskSusie.com/WGN. GoAskSusie.com/WGN. Really fascinating conversation. The headline was misleading, everybody. You don't get to talk your wives into this. They're not going to go for it unless you're one of the 5% of the 50%. So it's a small little number. It's like getting drafted into the NBA. Most likely not going to happen for you. But you're probably better off in the end, right?
It is a very small number of people for whom that would even be a topic of discussion. And like I said, there was a lot of extenuating circumstances going on.
Sure.
What I would see, Matt, is most couples do after, as they're going through the repair process, they look at their marriage, they take a closer look, and they do make amendments and they do make tweaks, but it'll be things like, you know, twice a month we go on a date, or, you know, you leave your kid, the kids with mom more.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be those types of agreements. It's not always going to be something as, you know, titillating as.
Well, and I would imagine you'd rather see clients make agreements where we're going to find whatever reason I strayed or would want to stray. Let's figure out how to overcome that so I'm not thinking that way or doing that. And let's get the kids at mom's house and get out more. Let's reconnect ourselves and make more time for us than these other things. I would think you'd almost rather see a marriage agreement where instead of saying I can cheat twice a year, he says, okay, we have to fool around four times a month. That's what we need to do. Sign on that dotted line. I'll give you your fifth child. Then I imagine you'd be a little more happy with that idea, right?
Well, you know, it's their lives. I'm not in it. You know, so they have to choose for themselves.
Sure.
For the most part, you want to see because the marriage, the affair is not going to be symptomatic of having given your partner too much attention.
Yeah.
It's going to be symptomatic, as I tell people, you know, just like a distracted driver is the most dangerous driver on the road, a distracted partner is most vulnerable to infidelity. So it's the workaholics that you're looking at, that, you know, you're just busy with all this different stuff and you just get distracted and you leave, that opens a broken window, in your relationship. And these are the things to pay attention to. And to just piggyback on what you said earlier about the telltale signs, one of the things that I look for in the couples that are going through the recovery process to kind of help them understand, you know, their probability of success, if I see a wayward partner who is remorseful, I don't mean guilty, but feeling very remorseful, truly sorry, but more importantly, asking me a question like, how did I get here? And how did this happen? How did I allow this? It tells me that he's wanting to use this to learn about himself and to become aware of where he's, you know, he can be seduced, what his temptation looks like. That guy, to me, has a much higher chance of not repeating his mistakes. But the guys that just are like, listen, just tell me what I need to do to get through this. You know, I apologize. Isn't that enough? Those I'm not so keen on.
Yeah. GoAskSusie.com if you want the 2-hour free audio program. GoAskSusie.com/WGN. Susie, thank you so much for being on the show with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Matt. I appreciate it as well.
Absolutely. You have a great morning. I hope we talk again. It's Matt Bubala with you here for one last hour here on 720 WGN. Next Saturday, I won't be here at my normal time because Mr. Johnny Williams is taking Saturday off. So I will be here from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon next week, Roger.
No.
I apologize.
There will be somebody fun
and happy for you to hang out with. I'm quite sure of it.
I'm sure, but I'll still miss you.
Then the next Friday we'll be together.
Okay.
And then the week after that, Patty's gone for a little bit, so I'm going to do Thursday and Friday night her show.
Well, then we'll still be on.
We'll still hang out a little bit together.
Yeah. All right.
We're not going to play What's in the Box.
You're a hard habit to break. Why not What's in the Box?
Because only Patty can moderate that program. I become a 13-year-old boy who just giggles the whole time.
Okay.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to speak with one of the attorneys representing the nuns trying to close down Club Allure in Stone Park and find out what's going on with that. The most interesting thing I saw on the internet this week, there's so many different little videos out there. And one thing I love about, like, say, Facebook, you're just scrolling through your newsfeed. People post all these. There's so many good, short food videos being made. Here's how to make some crazy, goofy thing. And then in 3 seconds, by speeding it up, they show you how to make all this stuff. And it always looks good. And then you never make it. But it looks good. It looks like you would do it. But then you don't do it.
Never make it.
I saw one this week. I don't know how somebody came up with the idea to do this. But they took, what was it, like, think molten aluminum, basically. So boiling hot melted aluminum.
Okay.
And they had an anthill in their backyard, a big one.
Okay. Okay.
So they started pouring it in the top of the anthill. And it takes them about 3 minutes to very slowly and gently just pour little bits of this molten aluminum. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not what it was called when I watched the video, but that's the basic thing, melted down aluminum that's going to rehard.
Mm-hmm.
And they pour it in there, and it takes a few minutes, and they finally get it all out, and then they stop, and you see all the smoke coming out of little different holes on the thing, and then they waited, I don't know how long, let it harden, and then they start scraping away with a shovel. And they end up digging down about 2 feet into the ground around, and they lift out this what now looks like a big tree stump, and it's heavy, you can tell. The guy lifts it up, takes it out, and then it starts running a hose on the whole thing and washing away all the dirt.
Right.
And what you end up with is this amazing almost piece of art that is this intricate series of mazes of hardened aluminum, because it went in all the little nooks and crannies of all the tunnels that these ants had built way down into the ground.
Interesting.
Fascinating and odd. My daughter said, "What happened to the ants?"
Yes.
Well, honey, some ants were hurt in the making of this video, is my guess.
I would say so.
I don't think the SPCA was on hand for this one. Unless they ran really quick.
No, they're embedded in the aluminum or whatever, the metal.
Maybe they're sort of, we should have talked to Elliot about this, they're frozen in carbonite like Han Solo was.
Ooh, nice. Star Wars in the ant form.
Ant Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I thought that was odd, but kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
I like things like that. They're weird.
No, that's all right.
312-981-7200. I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we are going to... By the way, Roger, I got to tell you one quick thing. My favorite candy bar of all time. I was very excited to find this out this week. My favorite candy bar of all time that I don't find anywhere anymore was called the Marathon Bar. Remember the Marathon Bar?
Vaguely.
It sort of looked like, you know those braided belts that people wore a few years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like leather braided all through each other. They sort of looked like that.
Okay.
It was caramel wrapped in chocolate or something like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist anymore. But I found a site, and maybe it was like one of those things, clickbait, that people try to get you to click through. The 10 candy bars you can't get anymore, and then you have to click on a separate page for each one so a new ad can come up. But it's sold by, I think, Willy Wonka. It's sold over in England, but you can order it online. It's called the Curly Whirly Bar. But they say it's almost exactly a marathon bar, or it is.
So it's not the...
It's not the marathon bar with the old red wrapper and the whole thing. But if you order a Curly Whirly Bar, supposedly it's the same thing. And I could order a case online. I think I might order a case.
Oh, look at you.
I'll pass them around. We'll have fun with them.
You are so bad. You are just... Here you're trying to be healthy.
I'm not as bad as Club Allure, who is taking off the nuns in the neighborhood. Let's talk to their lawyer next. Welcome back into the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. I don't know if you've been following the story in the news, but out in Stone Park, there is a gentleman's club, or a strip club, for lack of a better word, called Allure. The different thing about Allure is it is built within feet of a convent. And the nuns are none too happy about this strip club next door that's been there since 2011. But in the last couple of years, they've started filing lawsuits and really trying to organize to see if they can't get this place shut down. Joining us on the phone right now is Thomas Brucka. He's the president and chief counsel with the Thomas More Society, who's been helping represent the nuns. Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm fine, man. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you very much for jumping on the phone with us.
Sure.
Give me a little bit of the history. I know you came in after you heard about this. You guys have come in to help out the convent and represent them. But this is interesting. So the club was built in 2011, but the first lawsuit, or the first time they really filed a public motion, I thought was 2014. Is that right?
Well, it was actually filed, I think, a little sooner than that, Matt. But there were a lot of administrative hearings and so forth before we got into the case. And, you know, the nuns were kind of taken by surprise. They required by law to serve notice, but the notice was by mistake. You know, they claim served mistakenly half a mile away. So the nuns thought this was a restaurant going up, big fancy restaurant, and they were, you know, happy about it. And then the word came out, and a lot of people were upset. There were protests, street demonstrations, and I read a news story about it, and called them up and asked if we could help their lawyer. We're a kind of a national public interest law firm, and we thought they could use some help. They said, well, we don't have a lawyer. We couldn't afford one. It's a Midwestern headquarters for a group of nuns that, helps migrants. And, of course, this used to be a very Italian community, and now it's mixed with a lot of Hispanic immigrants.
Okay.
So they needed help, and we were happy to come into it and help them and figure out some legal theories. And, we took action.
Well, one of the things I've read is that there was a complaint, and Melrose Park jumped in on this lawsuit, too, because the convent is actually cross borders? Are they partly in Melrose Park and partly in Stone Park?
That's right, man. They straddle the border. The club is in Stone Park within 2 feet of the nun's backyard fence, and the part of their yard is in Stone Park, but the main part of their buildings is in Melrose Park. So This is one of the issues in the case.
So one of the complaints is a zoning violation, but has that been dismissed? I've read that they complained about a zoning violation, but that doesn't seem to have gotten anywhere. So is that part over with?
Well, it's not over with because, if we lose the rest of the case, we don't think we're going to, but if we do, we'll take an appeal. We think our argument about zoning was accurate. The judge disagreed with us because he said it was a home rule municipality, which means the state law is superseded. We say, home rule doesn't apply when you're impacting somebody on the other side of the municipal border. And, that's what happened here. This is against the public policy of Melrose Park. So we'd say the 1,000-foot buffer zone that state law imposes should be enforced.
What is the 1,000-foot state law?
Well, it's within... And no adult establishment, and there's not much question disqualifies in that regard.
Yeah.
If you read our complaint, it can't be within 1,000 feet under state law of, among other things, places of worship. And the nuns have 3 regularly used chapels in their headquarters. They've also got a retired nun's home. It also applies to schools. There are schools within 1,000 feet. So that's why Melrose Park has a stake in this, too, as well as some neighbors. So we have other clients here besides just the nuns.
Interesting. And Stone Park, though, is not helping out in this case, right? I mean, Stone Park is helping defend the club, correct?
Yes, absolutely. They're not cooperating at all. The mayor, who's going to preside over a liquor hearing this coming Tuesday, frankly, is very hostile to the nuns. He's threatened them. He refused them a permit to have their Stations of the Cross, a religious ceremony out on the street that was, he said, too close to the club. So, in a sense, he applied a buffer zone against the nuns. They were bothering the club.
Well, if they're in Stone Park, can't they do what they, or if they're in Melrose Park on their property, can't they do what they want?
Well, we say no, the law says no, and we want the law enforced. And, there are, I mentioned the neighbors, there are backyards and private residences that go up against this club, too, with swings and playgrounds in the backyard. So these families, they want a decent, a nice family neighborhood, and here this big thing is reared up right across their backyard fences. So.
Well, Tom, why haven't, if they're, and it looks like from the pictures I've seen, I haven't been to Club Allure, just so you know. I might have to pay a visit after this interview just for research, Tom. But
yes.
It looks like there's, if it is surrounded by residential, as it seems, why haven't you gotten more families to sign on and get more of a groundswell of not only the nuns, but the neighborhood to rise up and say, hey, this is a neighborhood. This should not be in our backyard.
Well, we have, Matt, got quite a few folks signed on to the liquor complaint who are living in Stone Park proper. And, there is a question about immigration status from some of the people. The mayor has threatened to take action, and we've retained immigration counsel. And when you're a witness in an ongoing proceeding, you're protected against deportation. So, they're playing dirty, frankly, and the good guys this time are fighting back.
So you're saying that the mayor of Stone Park has alleged that if people want to jump on this bandwagon, then he's going to look into them and see if there's something he can do to make their lives tougher.
Well, I think worse than that. In fact, they had flooding, and the you know, the Tribune Spanish edition, Hoy, wrote a story about it not that long ago. And the mayor had gone in and gotten flood aid on prior occasions where they had floods. This time he said, no, we're not going in for aid. Instead, we're going to, in effect, condemn your property and offer to buy your homes for $5,000 a piece. That's a pittance and an insult, and obviously a movement to intimidate these families.
Hmm. Very interesting. One question I guess I would have with the zoning issue is, you mentioned that the nuns were happy when they thought a restaurant was going in. That would still be the same zoning issue, wouldn't it? A business establishment going in a residential area, or is it falling under different zoning issues?
Oh, no. The zoning law is targeted at adult entertainment establishments.
Okay.
And that's a separate zoning category. A restaurant would be a family-friendly place,
sure,
for the economy in Stone Park.
Sure. It wasn't about business then. It was about adult-themed business and the laws that pertain to that.
You got it.
Okay.
It's not only adult-themed, but we say it goes way beyond Illinois law. And frankly, the question is, this prostitution? Well, the Illinois Appellate Court ruled that it was. And, we think that's binding on the court. So we're not going to argue about this. We're going to say, Judge, I think the law here is clear.
All right, look, we're going to take a quick break, and then, Tom, I want to ask you to get into that a little bit, because not only are the nuns annoyed that, there's a basically a house of ill repute right behind them, depending on your definition of ill repute, but they think that more is going on than just dancing, and that there are other illicit activities. They've had nuisances, not just noise, but actually people showing up on their property. Tom will explain all that and explain the law and how he thinks that the judge will hopefully see it their way. Right after we take a quick break. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. It's Matt Bubala here with you, Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Tom Brekka. He's the president and chief counsel with the Thomas More Society, and he's helping out the Missionary Sisters of St. Charles Borromeo, who are suing to get Club Allure in Stone Park closed down. One of the reasons, Tom, so there was mention that one time they're having 6:45 a.m. mass, and that's just the nuns, right? It's not, they don't hold public mass, I'm assuming, correct?
Well, they do.
They do,
okay. They have Sunday mass there, and but I think this was a daytime mass, and I don't know if there were neighbors who attended or not.
Right.
But they have kept the door locked since this incident.
Yeah, the nuns are holding mass. Some guy comes stumbling in from Club Allure, sounds like, and he claimed, it said in the paper, that he thought he got drugged at the club.
Well, that's what he thought, and whether we could prove it or not,
sure,
is another matter.
Right.
But, that's the kind of thing, that's just one incident that's particularly egregious. But apart from that, there have been fights, there have been brawls, both inside the club, reported on police reports, outside in the parking lot, there's been drug use, there's liquor bottles around. It's the kind of thing that, doesn't belong in the vicinity of a residential neighborhood where kids are being raised, going to school, and so forth. And again, I think that's why the zoning law was passed. I think the judge should enforce it. He disagrees with us on that, but we don't think he's going to disagree on the prostitution issue, which we've researched. We've sent investigators in there, and
And let's go into that a little bit. So you guys had an investigator go there over the last, I think it was 12 to 14 months. He spent $1,200. I'm not going to make the jokes about how did you get that job for this guy, whatever. I'll let that go, Tom.
Yeah.
If I had their lawyer on, that's the joke I'd make, but because you have to be respectful. So
yes,
this guy goes in and out, probably gets the lap dances, different things like that, sees what's going on in there. And
right,
he claims that one worker there offered to have sex with him outside of the club for $250. So there's a prostitution offer there. But also, you mentioned that the lap dancing, you guys feel, rises to the level of prostitution. Now, I know that we've had these types of clubs in Illinois for ever since I turned 18. I've known they've been around, so that's a long time. And
mm-hmm,
these dances occur. We all know that. So why do you think it should be defined as prostitution?
Well, because the Illinois law says it is. The Illinois law you know, I don't want to get beyond anybody's rating restriction here, but it's touching or fondling of the sex organs of one person by another for money for the purpose of sexual arousal or gratification. Now, you know, we interpret that to mean that it applies whether people are clothed or unclothed.
Or not, yeah.
And in this case, you know, we're not the only ones who think that. So does the Illinois Appellate Court, and the only court in Illinois at the appellate level to address this issue. And they said it means what it says. Clearly, the legislature sought to prohibit any commercial transaction in which one person stimulates another person's sex organs for the purpose of sexual arousal. A sex organ need not be exposed to be stimulated. Thus, it unambiguously prohibits, and I'm quoting here, every kind of touching. So, you know,
so if you succeed in this, if you succeed in this, Tom, you're going to get lap dancing banned in the state of Illinois.
Well, we're not attacking every place. We're attacking this one because they were stupid enough and brazen enough to locate it across the backyard fence from a convent. You know, come on. And they know what they were doing, and they tried to slip it past these nuns. And that's why, frankly, we're very happy to have found out about it. The Better Government Association publicized it. So did the media, the Tribune, and the Sun-Times. We found out about it. They didn't have a lawyer, so that's why we were called up, and they were happy to have our help. And then Melrose Park called up. They joined us. So did all these neighbors. And so we think we have, Frank, you know, yes, the judge ruled against us the first time, but as Yogi said, it isn't over till it's over. And if we lose again, we're going to appeal.
Well, let me ask you, Tom, have the nuns looked at this at all as maybe an opportunity? Because if you close this club down, it reopens elsewhere. And here are all these women working in a role that I don't think any of us would hope our daughters would grow up to. And we'd all hope that these women who are dancers, maybe that's their choice. Maybe that's what they really want to do. They're making great cash, whatever. But we would hope for better things for them in life.
Well, that's right.
Have the nuns tried to talk to the girls that work there at all, or be present, or try to offer them counseling or help to, you know, get their life headed in another direction?
Well, here's what we've done, Matt. We've been in touch with many women's organizations. There's a woman named Annie Donawald who wrote a book called Dancing for the Devil. She has a Christian rescue outfit. There's the Salvation Army that does a lot of work here. A colleague of ours, Liz Yore, a lawyer that worked for the Department of Children and Family Services and then worked with Oprah, is an authority on sex trafficking. And, you know, the literature and the evidence is that these are places where sex trafficking flourishes. Consent is not a defense to a charge of sex trafficking. And frankly, we've urged that, you know, somebody file a lawsuit because these women have to pay to work there. They have no minimum wage. They have no overtime. The working conditions are really terrible, and it's degrading. And I think that, yes, the nuns are anxious to do what they can to help. Now, these are traditional nuns who wear a full habit. I don't think they'd be welcome going into the strip club. And if you saw the pictures, it has a big setback from Lake Street so that there's a big parking lot, and they're not going to get anywhere close to the door, much less to appeal to these women, and the cars go steaming by. They do have rosary processions outside the club, candlelight vigils. You know, if women contact them, I'm sure they would offer every bit of help they can.
Tom,
I think our best bet is through the groups that address these subjects specifically.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, I wish you luck. I think you face an uphill battle with the ways you're fighting this. I think the way you fight this is you hurt them economically. And they've got bigger pockets than the nuns have and more resources, and they're going to keep spending, and they've got Stone Park behind them. So you said, oh, the nuns wouldn't get in there. Why not? Because that's your lawsuit. The nuns all show up in full habits, pay the entry fee, and go sit in there. And when they're sitting in there, that's going to make it really tough for guys to come in and sit with the nuns and watch women dance. There's a lot of guys, I think,
well,
and then you affect them economically, and suddenly they're willing to play ball or talk to you guys, because once the cash stops coming in, that's when Club Allure starts listening, right? And I think let's get creative and find different ways to you know, hurt if you want to change these things, because otherwise, eventually they open somewhere else. But while that gets the nuns peace in their backyard, they didn't affect the change that I think they'd really like to affect, you know?
Well, frankly, I think the publicity about it, as you say, if we win here, we set a precedent. I think others will follow suit. I don't think the strip clubs are winning every case the way they used to. You know, they played First Amendment, but First Amendment protects speech, not conduct, and certainly not the conduct of acts of prostitution. Further, you mentioned they have more money than the nuns. That's true, but our last case, Matt, three trips to the U.S. Supreme Court lasted 28 years, and we came out on top. So we've got staying power, too, and we don't intend to quit until we win.
Excellent. Well, Thomas Breca, President and Chief Counsel with the Thomas More Society. You can find out more at thomasmoresociety.org. They're a nonprofit public interest law firm. He said the Christian version of the ACLU, you could sort of think of them as. I appreciate you coming on and talking through this with us, and we'll be interested in following where this ends up.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. Thanks, Matt.
All right, Don. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Matt Bubala here with you, Radio 720 WGN. 15 minutes left in our show. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile, where the flags across the United Nations Plaza are oh so gently blowing, and what's going to be a beautiful weekend. Roger, I don't know if you stayed in touch there during the last half hour as we talked to the lawyer representing the nuns. He is trying to claim that the lap dances should be illegal, that it's in itself a form of prostitution. And he read for us the definition, and it's, you know, arousing sexual gratification, yada, 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 and whether that's through touching clothes or not. Texter writes, don't you need to use your hands to fondle?
No.
I never had thought of it, but you don't think so?
Any part of your body.
Can fondle?
Yeah. It's the touching.
Touching, rubbing is fondling?
Yeah.
So there you have it. So if they succeed and they say take this to the Illinois Supreme Court and get them to rule, because he says an appellate court has already ruled this, he believes that the lap dancing does constitute this, they're going to ruin the adult entertainment industry in the whole state.
Gasp.
Yeah, I don't know what that would do to our tax base. Probably not much, but. You know, but I really do. I suggested it to him at the end. Suing them, he's going to get so far. But, you know, everybody's wasting money on lawyers. Why not? I don't. If I were the nuns, I would say, okay, let's just go over there every night. Let's go over there, get 20 nuns all in the full habit and the whole deal, and let's go sit in the club. Could you imagine being out with your buddies and you walk into this?
Right.
And there's nuns in there? Now, first you might be like, oh, my God, this is going to be crazy.
Right.
But then when they're all serious and just sitting there and not like, you know, partying and drinking.
Prayer book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you're just looking like, oh, my God, there's nuns watching me. I can't just sit here and throw money at this. That would, I think that.
Right.
And then if the club tries to turn them away, then they sue the club for that. There's a lawsuit.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
the club's
got
to let them in, I would imagine. As long as they're willing to pay the cover charge.
Sure.
They're legal. Can't turn them away.
There's no restrictions that I know of. Now, I've never been to any, so I don't know exactly.
Maybe before next week's show, we just, you know, take a visit out there.
A little fact-finding tour?
So things are, and, you
know, who knows?
Report on this with a little more in-depth information.
I'll put blinders on.
Sure you will. But, I really feel that I asked him this question. I wonder if they should look at this like, I don't know, maybe this sounds silly, but God put this here for us to do something about.
Yeah.
Not to just sue them till they leave, because that means they're just going somewhere else.
And it's costing a lot of money, too.
Yeah, and the nuns don't have the money to fight it, you know?
Yeah.
These guys are doing it, I think, pro bono.
I'm just wondering, here's another thing. Are the nuns doing this by themselves? Where's the community?
Well, he said that there were three other families signed up, and I asked him, well, what about everybody else? If this is around this many houses, he claimed
that it's a heavily immigrant area. And that's what these nuns help a lot with, is people who've just come to the country, things like that. And that's a lot of the work they do. He says the mayor of Stone Park, so the nuns' convent is partly in Melrose Park and a little bit in Stone Park. But the club itself is in Stone Park. But he was saying, listen, there's a rule in Illinois that a adult entertainment establishment like that has to be 1,000 feet away from houses of worship, schools, things like that. But because it's in Stone Park, the ruling on that was home rule. Stone Park can do what they want. If 1,000 feet away is Melrose Park, well, that doesn't count against them. Something along those lines. That's why they haven't been able to get away with that.
Right.
But so the nuns have this right here in their backyard. I would say, you know, instead of just suing to move them, which just means somebody will be taken off their clothes somewhere else, why not try to affect change, try to help these girls, try to do these things and see where you can get. But so the mayor, I'm sorry, I was saying that the mayor, so Mr. Brock is alleging that the mayor of Stone Park has threatened the families in the neighborhood that if you push back on this, if you send petitions to whatever, I'll make sure we're looking into everybody's legal status.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's getting a little ugly.
I say they hold services there on Sundays. That they have the ladies of the establishment serve as ushers during the services.
What outfits are they wearing?
Huh?
What
outfits? Oh, no, fully clothed, fully regular.
See, if
no
they
tassels.
Wore like the altar boy outfit, then everybody the whole time be thinking they're going to take that off at some point. This is going to get crazy.
Yeah, well, and that's how you fool them. That's how you fool the guys.
That's,
come on in. Oh, wow.
That's
this
how
is
you
cool
get them back in the pews, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what they ought to do. Team
there
up.
You go.
All right, you can stay, but you got to usher the mass on Sundays.
And how do you get the girls to do that? Here's how you do it. You have the nuns, like you said, during the week, sit in there, and they hold up pictures of the girls' sainted mothers and just embarrass the heck out of them.
Do that to the girls?
Yeah, to the strippers. Yeah, or your sainted grandmother.
See, I think, and he mentioned that, you know, in prostitution rings, they often go after the Johns now instead of the girls working. And I think that's a good way to do it. Because if you arrest, when you arrest the prostitute, if there's guys out there willing to spend money, somebody else is going to be performing the service, right? It's getting...
You go after the business owner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go after the cash. That's what will change things.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a sad situation, but we shall see where it ends up down the road. But they're suing them, and they're fighting back, and the club is fighting back. And maybe down the road, Shantae had some contact with the attorneys for the club itself, but we didn't end up talking to them tonight. So,
well, that's for another time. We'll find out. We'll see how it goes. Yeah. I still say fact-finding.
Yes, really. I think, you know, we must. Maybe we get Patty to come with.
You know she will.
I think Patty would be a lot of fun at a strip club.
Yeah. Oh, tons of fun.
We'll tell her that next week.
Yeah, right.
So one of the big stories that came out in the news today was in the Chicago Tribune and was certainly covered on DNAinfo.com was the idea that the Emanuel administration now, because they're facing this huge lawsuit over where they want to place the Lucas Museum. And Blair Kamen's come out pretty much against it, and the Friends of the Park are very against it because we're supposed to preserve this parkland east of Lakeshore Drive. But there's a parking lot there right now that would go away, and then this building would pop up. So they've been trying to work out other things because the administration's worried that if this lawsuit keeps dragging on, George Lucas might get a better offer in another town and say, all right, we'll just go put it here
because
they can do it.
They're afraid to go back to San Francisco. Which has its own issues.
Sure, yeah. Which is why he ended up in Chicago, because they wouldn't give him the land he wanted there.
Right.
But, so, DNA was reporting today that that the Emanuel administration is debating possibly moving the museum instead to the east building of McCormick Place.
Right.
The big, long, Mies van der Rohe-looking black building. I spoke for DNA Info today with Ward Miller, who is the executive director of Preserve Chicago. And it was interesting because I thought the argument would be, if you're taking down that building, then we need to preserve it more for the lakefront. That, I think, will be the Friends of Chicago argument, or Friends of the Parks argument, is that that land is supposed to be open land. So if we're taking down that building, then it goes back to open land. he argued that that building is architecturally important. And this whole interview with him at DNAinfo.com, I didn't expect that because I look at that building and I say, really? Mm-hmm. It's a long rectangle that's black and just like, I don't know, just looks like a dead weight on the lakefront to me.
And it's not the original building either.
It's not, but it is, he says, mm-hmm. an important piece of architecture from, I believe, the 60s.
Right.
And he went on in great length to describe the merits and the wonders of it. And he feels that they should just relocate the museum to that building. And went on to say, it's a huge building and all these opportunities and the windows and everything else. It's beautiful. And you could, blah, blah, blah. Which I'm sure George Lucas isn't going to say, yeah, sure, just throw it in that building. It's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're spending all that money, you want to create this building that you want to create, and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sure that's not going to work out. But it opens the debate of when does a building, we have this incredible architecture in Chicago, right? Some mm-hmm. of it clearly we have to save and make sure it sticks around. At some point, there's some buildings that you just go, well, you know, we like it and all, but something else needs to be built. We can't save. If we go on saving every single building, you know, then what do you have?
Right.
The old Chicago Stadium was this beautiful relic of architecture mm-hmm. from the 20s, right?
Yeah.
But you're not going to build a new stadium and then keep that one. It just wouldn't make sense. So when the new United Center went up, the old stadium had to come down.
Right.
You can't fight to keep that up, right? So,
well, structurally, it just it wasn't sound anymore either.
I don't know about that. I don't know that it couldn't have been fixed up and lasted. It just didn't make economic sense to keep running with a place that only sat 16,000 with no skyboxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't cutting it in today's economy.
Right.
But for a place like this McCormick Center place, you know, at what point mm-hmm. does architecture or the need to preserve certain types of architecture, do you say, well, it's on the lakefront and we don't love it. It's not that great of a building. Like the Thompson Center, mm-hmm. you know, that I think a lot of us would look at that and go, yeah, I don't love that thing. But it is this important piece of architecture in the architecture world. And it is one of the unique buildings of Chicago. So when Governor Rauner wants to sell it and get somebody to tear it down and build something better there,
mm-hmm.
people stand up and say, wait a minute. You know, Blair Kamen wrote a pretty impassioned piece about saving that building and changes that could be made. Actually, Helmut Jahn, who I believe is who designed that building,
right.
as well as had a piece in this McCormick Place building that we're talking about, he came out with a defense of the Thompson building and how they could save it and change it and things like that.
Well, the building inside, the functionality is not functioning inside. The heating, the air conditioning, it's just a mess. For anyone in there, and you know, it's god awful hot in the summer, freezing in the winter, inside all the offices and everything up there. The McCormick Place, I mean, if you're going to argue, this is the lakefront, it's public land, well, then what is McCormick Place doing on there in the first place? Second of all, is it functional anymore? No, because the majority of all the events takes place east in the newer building. There are some very large trade shows that they're worried about losing because they would lose the space, the wide open space that the old building has.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got George Lucas or Mayor Emanuel saying, well, you know, we're going to return part of the site as public land. We will give you more green space. But then you've got people arguing that they need a different design of the museum itself. It doesn't look pretty, I guess.
You know, one thing that Blair Kamen had come up with or somebody had suggested in a piece that he did on the Lucas Museum was to move it across the street from Lakeshore Drive. There's, I think, maybe some train tracks that are relatively abandoned or an open train area that they could build over and then build it there.
Sure.
And I think that would be a good idea. And then go a step further. If Lucas wants us to be lakefront, then do that and build right over Lakeshore Drive there. Like right over the top, like a big sloping downhill. Just for an area, Lakeshore Drive could be covered for a little bit. Why not?
Anything's possible. I don't know what legalities there are as far as an open roadway and structures over it, other than a bridge. I'm not sure if there's some other issues, legal issues that are currently on the books as far as building a building over.
Not a building.
Well, but it would be part of the building.
No. You build a hill. Just do a bit of a bridge, and then it's sort of a hill, so it kind of slopes down. It's all grassland headed towards the lake.
And you just let people walk over the grassy knoll.
Yeah, it's just you know, the Lake Shore Drive right there becomes an underpass.
Interesting.
And then you've got a really nice wide open area, and you reclaim more lakefront land.
Interesting.
We'll talk about it maybe more next week. Joining us on the phone right now, not on the phone, on the line right now, I believe, is our good friend, Mr. Orion Samuelson. Good morning,
Good morning. It's been interesting listening to you redesign the city of Chicago.
I'm trying to make everybody happy. We want this museum. We want more lakefront property. Let's move it over on the other side of Lake Shore Drive and just build a nice sloping hill down to the lake. We cover up, you know, a good 100 yards of Lake Shore Drive. At that point, we're driving by McCormick Place. We're driving by a Soldier Field. It's not like you're looking out on the lake anyways. I think that would be okay to have a little bit of a tunnel situation there.
You know what I would like back? I'd like Miggs Field back. I have an airplane, and we use Miggs Field a lot, and I'd love to have that back, but that's not going to happen, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Mr. Lucas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, money talks, so